Spoken, mate.
I haven't thought about flying for a long time. I haven't dreamed of that moment when I was alone above the clouds for a long time. I haven't dreamed waking up in a room surrounded in blue and green grass for more years than I could dream of memory. I haven't walked back into the past or scratched on the doors of my origins, where it all came from, to hold up that cape for the last time.
Return to Kent Town 10th Year Anniversary Edition is a revised version of Andy N's first poetry book. The book can be purchased from Amazon and it contains numerous additional material.
Spoken Label.
Hi, it's Andy N from Spoken Label. Thank you today for streaming or downloading another episode of Spoken Label. Spoken Label was originally set up on beginning of 2016, and as of speaking, has currently nearly 300 sessions. The full archive is available on Spoken Label, bandcamp.com. Although it is available for free for stream and download if you wish, I am always grateful for any sort of kind of donation to enable me to keep the running costs of this podcast going. And enjoy. Take care.
Bye-bye. Hey, guys. At the end, Spoken Label. Back in the house on a Sunday evening. It's been a lovely day today as well. It's going to be cooler now, but it's a lovely day. So we're over to a lovely part of the world today as well. We're up to Norwich, and I've got friends that live in Norwich as well, and it's one of those places I should go to, but I will someday. Now, we've got the fantastic... I'm going to introduce myself. Patrick, introduce yourself to everybody, mate. Tell us something, a little bit about yourself, and... what you're adding your creativity, and we'll start from there.
I'm Patrick Widdis, now based in Norwich, but I've been in various other parts of the world during my time. As far as poetry goes, I've been writing most of my life. Started writing poems at school, and teachers and so on seemed to like them and gave me a bit of encouragement, so I carried on doing that. So eventually ended up doing English and creative writing at university, and ever since then, you know, poetry has been one of the things I've done. I've done a lot of other things at different times, but poetry has always been an interest, and it's been good to sort of connect with people and to sort of have interesting experiences, which I'm sure we'll go on to discuss.
Definitely with that one. Now, I think we're going to start off with today. I usually go in logistical order, and I'm not in that sort of mood today. So, but yeah, people are wondering, obviously, I've been on your podcast fairly recently. So I think we should talk about that first of all, because I contacted you a couple of months ago about your fantastic podcast itself, Poetry Nonstop. So we'll go on to that first of all today. So tell people a little bit about your own podcast, where this came from, and what started you off?
Well, for that, you sort of have to go back to my teenage years. And as a teenager, it was quite difficult. I was very socially awkward, autistic, in fact, but I didn't know that until much later. And so I was sort of quite lonely. But I used to listen to the radio a lot, and there was a show with Mark Radcliffe and the Boy Lard, or Mark Riley, to give him another name.
I used to listen to that as well. Oh, yeah, it was a great show.
Yeah. So I had a lot of new music on, but they also had poets, people like John Hegley, Ian McMillan, Simon Armitage, and... these poets, especially John Hegley and Ian McMillan, used to set little writing exercises for people to send poems in, which I did quite a lot, and they even read some of them out. I would disown most of those poems now. They weren't my best, but it was great to hear them being read on the radio and feel that I was a part of that program and that community. And that really spurred me on to carry on writing, as I say, do creative writing at university. As I carried on writing, I always enjoyed this idea of being given a prompt or an exercise and just trying to write something. And lots of the time, just writing something you'd never have imagined you would have written before. So a lot of my best poems have come out of that. In my 20s and 30s, I got involved with community radio in Cambridge, and I did a show for many years, which featured an eclectic range of music and poetry. So I was very much influenced by Mark and Lard and John Peel and things like that. Then I moved away from Cambridge, stopped doing the radio, but then I thought I'd do a podcast, pretty much in the format I do now, with people coming on talking about their poetry, but also sharing ideas for the audience to get writing and sharing their work as well.
Yeah, great stuff indeed. Yeah, it's like I said, I've really enjoyed going on that show because what you people are wondering of is that you, when you had me on, for example, you had me talking about one of the poems from the last poetry book and discussing how a prompt actually dictated it for me. And it was fascinating because, as you said yourself, like it's you've just answered your own question here, but saying a lot of your best poems have come from prompts. And I'm the same really, because it's I think tell me if you agree with this, but do you think a lot of the best poetry you write is done by accident, really, isn't it? It's like I think a good
Yeah,
prompt
indeed.
can push you to actually do it by a complete accident.
Yeah.
That's why, yeah, that's how I find it really interesting when you said that to me. Do yes, straight away with it, because poem I talked about was when basically we look at I had to write a poem about setting various cities to show how the movement reflected people. No, it made me think about things in a different way then actually as well. So yeah, brilliant. Now, obviously, there's besides just being a poet doing your own podcast as well. I know you're a busy man, you are. You're a busy me, Patrick, because I know you've been telling me, haven't you, off mic, that you do you're a regular improv comedy performer as well, up in your way as well. So I've done improv comedy and I struggled with it, but tell us about how you approach this.
Well, it's not something I ever thought that I would be able to do or be particularly good at. But when I moved to Norwich, I was looking on Meetup for any groups or activities that I could go along, meet some people, and get to know this new city I was living in. And I found that there was this weekly improv comedy class you could just drop into on a Sunday afternoon, and I thought, well, it might be a fun thing to try and meet some new people. Didn't think I'd sort of be particularly good at it or perform particularly, but I went along and it was a very fun couple of hours and a friendly group. And then it turned out that they were having a jam session in the evening, so they were just playing some improv games in a pub, and anyone from the audience could join in. And I went along just to watch. But I somehow got roped into doing a few of the games. So I found myself performing in public after one class, and I didn't really look back after that.
Oh wow. Wow. Yeah, I think tell me if you agree with this as well, where like it's a good way of losing your nerves, really, isn't it, in front of members of the public or performing a stage just by going along and just going for it basically, I suppose, isn't it? Is a good saying, looking at everything else.
Yeah, so it's wonderful to find how supportive people are, because everyone is kind of accepting each other's ideas and trying to make the scene work. And yeah, you also have that sort of have that spontaneity. So you sometimes just get up on stage and you find yourself doing some kind of crazy scene which you would just have never imagined, and it usually just comes out of one word that someone in the audience shouts out.
Wow, yeah, it would be, wouldn't it? Yeah, because I've done it the odd time, but I'm not a quick enough thinker for that. Very creative, but not a quick enough thinker. But what's been the craziest scene you've done then since you started doing these? Is there anything you can share?
Well, that's good question. There was one a while ago, which I ended up doing a short piece of writing about. But it was, we're just given the word mortar. And I just took on this persona of this kind of goblin or something talking this weird voice about mixing the mortar and got to get all the mortar on. It's great when he can just latch on to a really strong character like that. And it was just like a crazy few minutes.
I could relate to that. The maddest one I've done was I ended up doing a scene on improv comedy on in front of about 50 other people. We had to describe our imaginary character going on, like all these what's it called? My mind's gone blank. Internet, sort of dating groups you're going. I forgot the name of it now. My mind's gone blank. A 5-minute dating thing you chat to people. And I went along pretending to be. I was obsessed with more eating jelly babies and actually chat going on dates with people. So yeah, it's and that came from a bag of jelly babies in my hand by chance, actually. So it does sometimes you don't know which way it's going to lead you, do you? I suppose so.
Yeah.
How since you started doing this, then has it impacted your work as well, like your creativity, your writing, and your stories, for example?
I think the more you think creatively, the easier it and more effective it becomes. Certainly, you know, it's great for the imagination. So you're, you know, thinking and acting and responding to things. And of course, you see lots of other people performing as well. And that's always inspiring.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely with that. No, fantastic stuff. Now, slight change in tone as well, because I know you've done some teaching abroad, haven't you, as well? At one few points, you taught English in Greece, China, Japan, and Poland. How was that experience?
It was quite up and down, especially with the teaching itself, but it was a great way to spend my early adult life. And those experiences are priceless as you get older, having seen and experienced different cultures and not just going for a couple of weeks holiday, but actually living there, attempting to learn the language forming professional and social relationships.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Because I did that in Brazil back in my 20s as well. And yeah, fantastic experience. Mm-hmm. Struggled like hell with the language, but that's Berks have been dyspraxic. Unfortunately, I'm hopeless with languages, so I know what you mean there. But yeah, no, brilliant. Now, obviously, since you've obviously gone into the poetry world and you're podcasting as well, I know you're telling me before that you've done a book as well, haven't you? Called Poetry Nonstop. Now, what did the book come before the podcast, or was it during the podcast?
That came before the podcast. So I'd done NaPoWriMo National Poetry Writing Month, which is coming up next month in April, where you have to write a poem every day. So I was doing all these prompts, and I thought it would be rather interesting and useful to put together a book with telling people how I'd approached that and why it was a worthwhile thing to do, and give them a set of prompts to work through during the month and the poems I'd written in response to them. Then that sort of became the blueprint for the podcast.
I was wondering which way around it was. No, it's true. That's fascinating, that indeed. Now, obviously, we've been doing NaPoWriMo for some years now, and I've been doing it for more years than I'm going to admit, right? But have you found, obviously, like Nature of the Beast when you're doing it, when you first started doing it, did you actually follow the prompts on the website strictly, did you? Or did you branch off into your own direction pretty quickly?
I mostly followed the prompts, but a lot of the time you start with the prompt and you quickly go off somewhere completely different. And as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't really matter what you do. If you end up with a poem, it doesn't matter if it's not related to the prompt at all.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that one. First couple of years I did Napawino, I was very strictly stuck to the prompts. Regretted it sometimes, because sometimes it'd be like I'd end up spending 2-3 days on one prompt and I feel like I'm going nowhere faster, but then I'd have to play catch up then. But yeah, I agree with you completely with that. So have you found, and that's the horrible one to ask because I can't remember this, but what's been the prompt that you found? Oh, no, let me reword that for you a second. Well, let me ask you this in a slightly different way then. Have you found that some prompts, Nature the Beast, have really clicked with you almost immediately? There's some you're sat there thinking, my God, how am I going to get a piece from that?
Yeah, absolutely. Some things just trigger something right away. I think the ones I've often found difficult is where you're given a few words which you have to incorporate into a poem, because then you just get focused on trying to put these words together like a jigsaw puzzle rather than on writing an interesting poem. But yeah, at some point you just have to find a poem by whatever route you can, and however far that takes you from what you were originally trying to do.
Yeah, no, I think you did right with that, because poetry is a funny thing at the best of times, and as a poet up my way, and I'm not going to name him because he'll tell me off for it, but he's always a believer, even if you don't want to share the poem afterwards or you don't think it's good enough, it's the fact is you've actually wrote the poem, and I think that's the important thing with it sometimes.
Yeah.
That's why. So no, definitely with that one. So no, brilliant. Now, I want to learn a bit more about your experiences performing on the circuit where you are in Norwich. So how many years have you been performing over Norwich Way for in your poetry?
Well, since I moved there in 2017, it's usually two or three events. Well, open mic events each month. Every couple of weeks or so, I guess an opportunity to read somewhere. And sometimes I've got to be like done a feature slot at places.
No, same thing. Where we are in Manchester, obviously, you'd guess that there's quite a bit going on all the time around there. But yeah, I'm always a believer. Like, I love reading out in places to people I don't know. And it'd be the same with where you are as well. I think it's the experience sometimes, isn't it? When you go to these sort of nights, you don't know what you're going to get sometimes, I don't think. And that adds to the fun, I think, I believe.
Yes.
That's why. But yeah, certainly. And how do you find it then, when, say, for example, you get a chance to do a feature set? And like I said, it comes up every now and then. But instead of do you find you have to plan out what you're doing completely different, say, just a 4 or 5 minute set?
It can be hard to choose what to read. If you're getting 10 or 15 minutes, that's a good chunk of time, but it's still not enough to read everything. And you're always torn between reading the old favourites and maybe trying something a bit new. Generally do a bit of both.
Yeah, not the same here as well, because you do. I think as well, I'm the same, because when I'm doing stuff like that, I will go back to old favourites. But obviously, like you said, I think it changes, doesn't it, naturally sometimes as well. Mm-hmm. So I know what you mean with that. Have you tried out doing any of the Zoom poetry nights or anything, have you?
I did during lockdown, and there's still some which run on Zoom some of the time. So, I much prefer being in the room with everyone, but it's good to connect with people over a wider area.
I'm a bit of both, really, because I usually try and do at least one a month on the Zoom side of things. Mm. And I've got, to be honest, people know, I've got quite a few podcasts come from that, really, as well, just constantly meeting people. You do, and I think it's... I mean, you're right, it's a different experience sometimes, isn't it? Hearing people born from other countries and other parts of the England itself or wherever, just to, it gives you a different perspective, I think, when you work sometimes.
Yeah.
That's why. So, yeah. Okay. Where do you envisage your creativity taking you next then? Do you have any sort of ideas yourself yet?
I keep thinking I should put a book together of some sort, but then it's kind of working out poems that go together and then finding somewhere to publish them. I'd quite like to do sort of a bit more children's poetry. I have two young nieces, so I've written some poems for them, which has been sort of really enjoyable to have that sort of specific audience. And there are a couple which they have requested on more than one occasion, so that's encouraging. Those ones obviously work.
Brilliant, great stuff. I didn't actually know you wrote children's poetry as well, so that's brilliant. Yeah, like, tell people obviously how it feels you varying, you're going from adult material then turning on to children's poetry then, because I've done both and you're right, it's great experience, really is.
I don't know really. Obviously you have to kind of think of what's going to engage them, and you have to be quite clever with the language to make it engaging and interesting. It can't sort of be dead simple either.
Yeah, I think so. You're dead right. It is, when you write children's poetry, you can be as clever as you are with adult poetry, but it's just a different perspective altogether, I believe. Definitely so. Oh, brilliant. Brilliant to that. So how do you actually, last question before we go into the credits in this one, is back to your podcast, because I meant to ask you this before. If you're obviously, how do you research your guests then for your podcast? Do you get quite a lot of people contacting you, or do you have to look around sometimes?
I sometimes get people contacting me, and as I've said, I'm going to a lot of local poetry nights, so I'm regularly approaching and encouraging people to get involved that way. It's a lot to juggle, really, finding guests and getting the podcast set up and editing them and getting them out while you've got everything else that's going on in your life.
Oh god, yeah, I can well relate to that one. Yeah. Well relate to, yeah, I know what you mean with it. It's hard work to, and I don't think people realize, do this sometimes, what actually goes into actually doing a podcast like we're both doing, and because it's hard work. It's, yeah, you said already got lots of editing to doing it. And then, like, it's all the uploading on top of it. It could just take forever sometimes, can't it? So,
yeah.
I know what you mean. And then, like, you get dodgy internet connections as well, like we've already had tonight. It just makes life really, really hard. No, fair play to you, that straight away. So, brilliant. Okay. We'll wrap up part one here. I want to give you plenty of time for us to read some poetry in the second half as well, mate. So, okay. Where can people find Poetry Nonstop, first of all?
PoetryNonstop.com.
Brilliant.
And at Poetry Nonstop on most of the socials.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, brilliant. And also as well then, obviously, where can people find out more about you then, Patrick, beyond the podcast?
I've got a website which I update occasionally, patrickwillis.co.uk. I'm pretty easy to find on Google. There aren't a lot of Patrick Widdises around.
No, fair play, mate. But that's why I tend to keep my name down as MDN. It makes life easier for people to find me then. So, yeah, no, fair play, mate, of it straight away. Brilliant. Well, what we'll do, we'll wrap up part one here, mate. And I want to give you plenty of time to read a few poems out for us in the second half. So, everybody, hang around. I've really enjoyed today, Patrick, so look forward to part two. See you all. Do take sure it's nice.
Spoken Label.
Hey guys, Andy N, Spoken Label. I'm going to get great pleasure saying this today. The amazing Patrick Widders from Poetry Nonstop. So I can make it like a crossover episode. Now, Patrick's going to read out four poems for us today. Take it away, my friend, with poem number one.
Okay, well, this first poem is called Flamingo. It was one of the first poems I wrote for the Poetry Nonstop podcast, and it was at a time I was really thinking about being neurodivergent or autistic, which I was later diagnosed with. And this kind of brought a couple of things together. I was sort of thinking about feeling isolated and not fitting in. And I heard a story in the news about flamingos, which were having to be hand-reared because they weren't surviving out in the wild. So I ended up with this poem, Flamingo. I'm free, stuck in the mud as the African sun bakes my snowy plumage. I was raised by light bulbs and rubber tubes, found comfort in featherless hands, was snatched from the jaws of wild dogs and meerkats as my beak strained to break my petrified shell. My world grew from cardboard box to carpet, and now this. As I jostle with these prawn cocktail-suited question marks, I try not to break eye contact as I check the two crumpled pages of notes tucked under my wing and adjust my pose. I can't even blush or make out a single word of the rising chatter.
Oh, I like the, I really like the ending of that one, Patrick. Like it is. It's another sort of pose I envisaged you might have gone on a bit longer then, but there was an awareness, I think, at the end of it. I think like it's like you're opening your eyes, like, realising the answer to your question then. That's brilliant. Mm. Tell us about how this poem came together then.
Yeah, so it was a prompt set by Martin Figura, a fantastic poet based in Norwich. And his idea was to sort of think of an experience that you found hard to write about and then focus on an emotion associated with that and then turn that emotion into a thing or an animal. And so hearing about these flamingos, which were being raised by people and then sent back out into the wild, it's sort of really fit in with that because I was thinking, well, you know, what's it going to be like for these flamingos who aren't used to other flamingos? Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah, I really got that then. That, yeah, it really connected me straight away, that one, mate. You know, brilliant stuff, yeah. It's like, I think it's that sort of piece where I presume you wouldn't necessarily know a lot about flamingos until you did that piece, and did you? So, and it's like, it's great. I think you stepped out of your comfort zone straight away with that. No, tremendous stuff, mate.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do, but I use my catchphrase now, Patrick. Less of me, more of you. give us poem number two, mate.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to read this one out of a book. It was another one which started life on the podcast. And it was basically to write a poem based on a myth or legend. I somehow got to thinking about what would it be like if someone today had Medusa's head. A while after the podcast came out, an editor from Macmillan got in touch saying she was putting together an anthology and wanted to use this poem. So it got published in this book with lots of other fantastic poets like Benjamin Zephaniah, Kay Tempest, Shakespeare, and with wonderful illustration by Chris Riddle as well, which is just the best thing that anyone's ever done to one of my poems. So this is Medusa's Head. It hangs from the end of my bed in the Marks and Spencer bag for life. It hisses in the night. I've been bitten once or twice. I tried to get rid of it, but the bin men won't take it. And I fear it being unearthed or found washed up on shore. Besides, it has its uses. I stopped a burglar halfway out of a window, but couldn't extract the flat screen welded beneath his right arm. No one gives me any trouble since they saw the traffic warden on the high street, tickets still gripped in his petrified hands. But I'd like some company. I haven't had a relationship last more than 2 weeks. They all want to see it, and then it's over, whether I oblige or not. It was easy to slay her reflection, but I know it won't be over until I can look her in the eye.
Oh, excellent stuff. Excellent stuff indeed, Patrick, there with that. Yeah, I think when you're writing something like a character like Medusa, it's one of those sort of pieces where you've got to try and give it a modern slant, haven't you, really? And I think you've got that dead right there with that. So was it a character that you were familiar with much before you did this poem?
Well, I'd heard the story. I'm trying to think now what it was that led me to that one particularly. I remember looking at various myths and legends, ones that I knew and new ones which I hadn't heard before. So it was a nice exercise to broaden my horizons. Little things like having it in a Marks and Spencer bag for life. When you've got a detail like that, you sort of have to go on and write the whole poem.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a great way of starting the poem off that, because you've took it straight bang, crashing into the modern era. And it's making, I think it works really well, because doing that at the beginning, you're telling people straight away you're doing something that's not traditional with it, and it works really well, mate. You've got the voice really, really well done there, so great stuff. All right, anyway, less of me, more of you, mate.
Right. This was another one which came from a prompt from a podcast guest, Helen Ivory. She does a lot of historical research for her poems. She's written sort of poems about witchcraft witch trials in Britain and other things. So that was something she encouraged people to try when she was on the podcast. I sort of looked at various historical documents, and I found a piece about P.T. Barnum, the circus guy, the greatest showman. And it was an advert for one of his acts in his freak show. This poem is prefaced with that thing. So this is called Tom Thumb. P.T. Barnum presents General Tom Thumb, a dwarf of 11 years of age, just arrived from England. He is undoubtedly a dwarf, barely grown since 6 months old, not 2 feet in height and less than 16 pounds. All right, he isn't quite 11 yet. His true age doubled and a bit. But a dwarf of 5 would not entice the crowds. Admire his antics and outfits. Did I really sell you short? And as for England, who would come for a kid from Connecticut with a name like Stratton? I see your hunger for the exotic. Chang, the Chinese giant. The wild men of Borneo. The snake man of Guyana. It's not so easy to stand and gawp at freaks that walk among us. So look around you as I call, humbly, for your applause.
Oh, you're really good at your entrance, Patrick. You are that because it's like you're doing mention about the end, the applause at the end of it. That's just a perfect encouragement to the audience to applaud you there straight away with that. Yeah, again. Yeah, I like that. I like that. Really, really clever stuff. Was that? When you're constructing your poems, do you always find sometimes the hardest bit is concluding the poem?
Sometimes I know pretty much from the beginning how it's going to end. Sometimes it's a complete surprise. It's a while since I wrote that one, so I can't remember. It came fairly quickly once I got the idea and once I'd read that. Actually, I just got sort of really interesting way he wasn't sort of being honest with his description, and but then how thinking how the people who were going were sort of their attitude as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It does feel like there's a bit of an unrelatable narrator in this piece as well, or main character. And I like that sometimes because you're never quite sure where it's going sometimes. And that works really well, Minna. Great stuff, mate. So, anyway.
Yeah, there's a funny story about that as well, because
Oh, yeah.
there's on the local radio, BBC radio station, I have a show called Upload, where you can send things and they put them out on air. So they broadcast a lot of episodes of the podcast, including this one with Helen Ivory, but they didn't include that poem because they said that people might find dwarf offensive. And see, it is a bit of a badge of honor that I've been banned by the BBC.
Good, oh, good man, good man. I'm proud of you, mate, with that one. So, no, definitely, I don't imagine I want to wear that one straight away. So, it made me think of when about dwarfs and stuff. Did you ever see the very old film Freaks, done by? Oh, it's kicking myself. It was about 1929, 1930, and that one got banned. It did quite deservedly. Look, it was actually set in 1932 film. It was. Done by Todd Browning, and that's a good tip for people to watch because that one deservedly got into a lot of trouble. So you made me think of that. So no, it's great stuff anyway, mate. So right, we are over now to the big finale, aren't we? So
Okay.
take it away, mate.
Well, we were talking about NaNoWriMo earlier, and this was one of the best poems I wrote in last year's NaNoWriMo, and it's for anybody who's tried getting anywhere by train. It's called Rail Replacement. The rail replacement bus was replaced by a horse and cart. A wheel broke just outside town, and the rail replacement bus replacement horse and cart was replaced by a carnival float. We were halfway round the route when the villagers declared a revolution. The carnival king and queen, a student couple on their way home for the bank holiday, were assassinated, and the rail replacement bus replacement horse and cart replacement carnival float was replaced by a barge. We chugged along the canal at 5 miles an hour until we were set upon by a swan, which did a kamikaze dive into the engine. Apart from three pensioners, we all made it to the bank before the vessel went under. The rail replacement bus replacement horse and cart replacement carnival float replacement barge was replaced by a crocodile. We were made to wear high-vis vests sponsored by McDonald's and walk two abreast. Then a hunter who wanted to sell the vests to a postmodern fashion designer opened fire. We dived into the undergrowth, and only six of us made it to the station, which had been replaced with Wetherspoons, which closed last summer and reopened as an escape room. "Just wait here," said a man in a 1920s guards uniform. He showed us into a room with a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle of the London Underground map on a table, and we heard the click of the lock turning behind us.
Oh, that is really, really surreal, that one, Patrick. I like that. It's that sort of piece. I think if I was reading that one out on stage, I'd have to be taking all kinds of deep breaths because I'd probably be stumbling all over the place for that piece and getting it mixed up. Have you found that one yourself, where you say, I think you read some poems out, you've got be mentally in the zone, haven't you? Because otherwise, like, you was tripping up all the time on that one. Is it that sort of piece when you wrote that originally where you look back at it now and think to yourself, like, where did some of the ideas, some of these lines come from? Because it gets more and more surreal as it goes along, and I like it for that.
Yeah, well, it was just trying to think of how to up the ante and then bring it to an interesting conclusion.
Definitely works well, considering at the moment, like, it's up where we are. There certainly is plenty of Witherspoon pubs that are closing at the moment. That's for sure with it. So, no, definitely with that one. So it's, I'm guessing, was it quite a quick poem for you to write that? Or did you have to really map that one out?
It came fairly quickly. I think I began to come up with it when I was on a replacement bus. The prompt had been travel or journeys or something like that. And I sort of thought, okay, well, I'm on a journey. And I sort of realised that, replacement buses are something very relatable. The first time I read it, people were coming up to me afterwards and telling me about farcical experiences they'd really had with replacement buses.
Oh yeah, I've had a few, believe me. I could definitely say, and even guys, I live in Manchester, and I've definitely had a few where it feels like it was going that slow. A horse and cart may have been quicker, to put it bluntly, mate. Yeah, so yeah, I know what you mean with that one, mate. Brilliant stuff indeed, mate. Anyway, that's it for today, guys and girls. I want to thank Patrick because this has been a really entertaining session, this, mate. And I really, really enjoyed this. So thank you again for this one, mate. It's definitely been a pleasure.
Well, thank you, Andy. It's been great to be on and chat to you and share my poems.
Yeah, definitely love to have you on again. Love to have you on again in the future, mate. To tell you that now, for a fact, it would be an absolute pleasure. Definitely, as well as an honour. So keep in touch, mate. So anyway, guys and girls, that's it for today anyway. So it's been a great fun today. So as Don Callis over at AEW Wrestling says, stay safe and stay over. And we will see you all next time.
Spoken Label.